Wells Tech, episode 674. Let's get together. Wells Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Welcome back to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 674. We're recording it on Thursday, February 10th, 2022. My name is Martin Spriggs, a show about technology and ministry. And joining me as usual, Sally Draper. Hello, Sally.
Hi, Martin. Joining you as usual, except it's Thursday, not Tuesday. Somebody actually asked me because 2 weeks ago we recorded on a Thursday as well, and that was a little off our normal schedule. Are we switching to Thursdays now or what?
We'll keep them guessing. Now, Tuesday is the day we normally would record, but I was actually over in Michigan on Tuesday, so felt that we could push this back later in the week, visiting our good friends at Michigan Lutheran Seminary and talking some technology with them. So
awesome.
It's always good to get over. And I hadn't been over there in a couple years. Pre-COVID probably was the last time I was over there. So it was good to see them again and talk about some good things. So making the rounds once again. So, but Thursdays is plan B usually, but we're flexible here at Wells Tech.
Tune in 2 weeks and see when we happen.
Yep, that'll be the question. Right.
Hopefully we'll be back in the normal swing.
Yeah. And does it really matter? The content is so good that, it comes when it comes.
If you don't believe me, just ask me and we'll tell you that.
Right. So. That's right. Speaking of content, what are we talking about today, Sally?
Well, something very timely and I guess you can say pun intended. It's all about calendaring today, scheduling things, running your church and school office efficiently with all the different activities and things you need to communicate dates and times for.
Yeah, way back when I was just kind of paging through our project management book the other day, and that was a full chapter in there on, you know, scheduling, calendaring, how to get people together and all the frustrations that and challenges that go along with that. And there are a ton of those. As you try and make meetings happen, Sally, what are some of the things that get in your way?
Well, I think number one on the list is that everyone has their own schedules.
No kidding.
So finding a common time is really a challenge. I was reminded of that just this week. I'm on a communications committee for the Lutheran Women's Missionary Society. And these ladies that are on the board of directors, they're super dedicated and they meet all the time and communicate all the time. But pulling together kind of an ad hoc meeting is really a challenge. People are very busy and it's hard to find something that works for the whole group.
Yep. One thing that has helped a little bit, in my opinion, is the use of virtual technology. People willing and not as afraid to meet virtually, where you don't always have to be in the same place at the same time. You just have to be available. So that has helped. But there are many, many other frustrations, you know, around this. And more oftentimes than not, I guess I find that, you know, once you schedule a meeting, there's something that happens between the scheduling of the meeting and the actual conducting of the meeting where things have to move. A key individual, you know, is not available or something's not ready or, you know, you name it. And that's a frustrating thing too. So nothing more frustrating. The only thing more frustrating than trying to schedule a meeting is trying to reschedule a meeting after it's been on the calendar. And so calendars are, should be a very stable thing in your life. It should be, if it gets on the calendar, it's going to happen, because what happens with my schedule, and I would guess probably with yours, is that you work your day around it. You work your week around it. You know, that kind of dictates what kind of prep you do and what you can and can't schedule during that day. And you work things that way. So there's some dominoes that fall, you know, when things go left or right or sideways, you know, with calendaring and scheduling. We're going to talk about some tools, but maybe before we talk about tools, Sally, maybe pass along some tips, just some high level, all multi-purpose tips that might be helpful when you're trying to use a calendaring system and schedule people into meetings, or, you know, whether that's one-on-one or multi-person meetings. One that came to my mind that I've tried really hard to do over the past couple of years is to add buffers between my meetings. So it is a meeting sin in my book to schedule a meeting back to back if I can help it at all. So allow at least 15 minutes, better yet, a half hour or an hour between meetings, because that allows you some prep time and some follow-up time, you know, once the meeting is over, to kind of capture your thoughts, to do items, those kinds of things. Take a breath, set your brain toward the next activity. So trying to add those buffers is really important as you're trying to figure out what my schedule can look like, what I'm available for, and what I'm going to ask other people to do as well.
Yeah, maybe along those same lines, Martin, I actually block out time on my calendar. So I use my calendar as a tool, not just for scheduling meetings with others, but for scheduling time with myself. Right. And one time slot in particular that I schedule each week is a review of the upcoming week. So it's kind of my Friday afternoon, end of the week. I really don't have brain power to do a lot of deep thinking at that point, but I can look ahead at my schedule for the next week. I can envision those meetings and maybe things I need to do personally to prepare for them. I can see where things aren't scheduled that need to be. And so that regular time on Friday afternoons for me to block out some time to review my upcoming week and schedule is pretty sweet. It really makes my next week, like, I hit the ground running on Monday morning because of that.
I do the same thing. And Friday seems to be that sweet spot for me as well. That kind of moves around depending on my Friday as well. But by the time Friday is over, that really needs to happen, or the next week doesn't go as well. Another tip that I really try and implement in my own workflow is to schedule meetings as early as possible, not early in the day, but with enough time. So a week out, 2 weeks out, a month out. You know, I really try to avoid scheduling meetings for later in the same week, if at all possible. Sometimes emergencies happen and you need to do that, but that's just not enough time for people to look, you know, to have enough flexibility in a calendar and a schedule. Depending on how many people you're trying to get together, it's nigh to impossible to try and get a lot of people together, you know, within a week. But try and look a week out, 2 weeks out, a month out, if you can. Work at it that way, and your chances of getting everybody's schedule clean and available by doing that goes up a lot. And that's a discipline, because you do have to think ahead, and that's where that Friday planning time comes into, you know, what meetings need to be scheduled, so you can look a week ahead, 2 weeks ahead, and figure out how we're going to make this happen. And obviously other people are going to appreciate that too, as they can their calendaring experience is going to be a little bit better if they can look out ahead, you know, more than just a few days.
Kind of a different angle, Martin. I think we've said before that the best camera you have is the camera you have with you in the moment. The best calendar you have is the one that is with you, that can remind you when you need to be reminded of what's upcoming. And I do that in a couple of ways. And I kind of parcel out my personal and my work. So I have two different calendaring systems in play. I use Outlook for work scheduling, and I use Google for personal scheduling. And my third option is actually paper. Oh my goodness. I use paper to write down my meetings. And that's actually part of my Friday afternoon schedule, blocked out time, is that I actually physically write down the meetings for the upcoming week. And that may seem a little dinosaur-like in technologies of today. But I'm a pencil and paper kind of gal, and that's what really hits home with me. This book is always in front of me while I'm at work, and my reminders are right there at my fingertips, basically.
use the same concept. I don't use paper, obviously, but I do use my iPad for that. And that works the same way. I open up my iPad and it's basically a sheet of paper there that, you know, I can note that stuff and I got everything right there. Another tip I would suggest is send well-timed reminders. Don't just assume, and especially if you're scheduling 2-3 weeks out, that, you know, this is top of mind for people as they're approaching that meeting. You know, maybe a week out, a few days out, whatever, send a reminder out, maybe spruce up the agenda, which would be another tip. Never schedule a meeting without an agenda. But send a reminder out saying, hey, this is coming up. These are some things to think about. Here are the documents that we're going to be talking about. Here's good ways to prep. Hope the schedule still works for everybody. So that there's just that little interstitial time where you've reminded them, hey, this is coming up. It's maybe still a week away, a few days away, but it's there. Don't look at your calendar one day and tell me, oh, I can't make it anymore because I forgot that I made another commitment over the top of that. So just these, and it's easy to do that, obviously, electronically, if you're using a scheduling tool of some sort to just send an email out to everybody saying, hey, this is coming up.
Yep. As the meeting organizer, you have that power when you schedule a meeting to actually build in some of that. And Outlook has that reminder capability. So does Google Calendar. And so definitely take advantage of that. And if you receive invites that don't include those, then set up your own reminders so that you come prepared, because that's going to make your meeting a lot more important. Martin, we've been really focused on personal calendaring and managing your own meetings, but churches and schools obviously have events and things on their calendars as well. And so applying some of these kind of concepts to the church and school, and I think even fundamentally where you do your calendaring for the church and school, is a really good place to start and think through and make sure you're doing it in a place that's more corporate. Not using personal tools, but corporate tools to do church and school calendaring.
Yeah, that's definitely a good approach, especially within the employee group that you have. So if you've got a faculty or a pastoral team, it gets a little more challenging, I think, when you have a set of volunteers. They have varying skill sets and different tools at their disposal, but you obviously have to work around that. Maybe one final tip before we jump into some of these tools, which is kind of the fun part of this conversation, is, maybe I'll do two. First of all, come prepared. You make good use of that time. People are going to look forward to meetings if they're well organized. And you, at least as maybe the meeting organizer, come prepared. So you're bringing your A game. You got all the stuff together. You got it together. You're not wasting their time. The second tip would be never, ever, if at all possible, cancel a meeting unless it's absolutely necessary. If somebody can't make it and that, you know, they're the fifth out of they're number five out of five people, you've still got the other four. You want to gain the reputation of, we're going to hold this. You know, this is going to happen unless, you know, most of the people are very key ingredients to the meeting aren't available. So kind of hold the line. Don't cave when somebody says they can't make it. You know, work around it, maybe hold another meeting, you know, sooner after that to make sure they get included. Take minutes, you know, send out notes, you know, try to include them in Zoom. You can record the meeting so they can have access, or Teams or whatever, Google Meet, so that they have access to what went on in the meeting as well. But try and stick to it, and that's going to move the project or move the discussion or keep things going. If you constantly have to reschedule, then you look up and boy, it's 3 months later after that first meeting was supposed to be scheduled, and that's going to delay whatever it is that you're talking about by 3 months. So,
very good.
Sally, right. Where do you want to start with tool time? What kind of things can we share that are going to make a difference for our folks?
I am going to start with one of my favorites right off the top. And I think we use this at the Synod level. I use it for LWMS things, personal things, and it's a tool called Doodle. You can get to it at doodle.com, and it is a free tool, and you can create a free account if you want to kind of track your meetings over time. But basically, it allows you to come up with different slots of time and send it out to a group and have them indicate which will work for them. So you get feedback. You can see everybody can make it at this particular time. And that's really a huge improvement over sending it out an email saying, when can everybody meet? And getting 9 responses back with different times in them. This gives everybody a starting point and allows them to respond with what works for them and what doesn't. And if none of the things work for the full group, then you can move on and suggest some alternate times. But super tool, easy tool to use and free on top of that. So check out doodle.com. I think there is a little advertising on the site because it's free.
Yeah, and there is a paid for or premium version, and I think there are some cool features that come along with that. One of them, I believe, is the ability to hook this up with your own calendar so you can take a look at what's available on your calendar as you're scheduling these time slots so that you don't have to kind of go back and forth and play that game. So pretty cool. A similar tool, if you are an Outlook user or Microsoft user, is called Find Time. I've used that before for people that I know use Outlook, and that integrates nicely with the Outlook tool.
Very good. There's several others that we'll just make mention of. We'll have links to these in the show notes. First off is one called You Can Book Me, and it's really marketing towards education, setting up things like parent-teacher conferences and that kind of thing. Again, it gives you different appointment slots and people can go in and grab them. I don't think they have to have an account or anything. In a similar fashion, if you want to organize something like a meal train or volunteers, there's different sites that specifically speak to that. Mealtrain.com and volunteersignup.com are a couple that I've seen used in churches and schools over the years where people can go in and sign up for a particular responsibility or to provide a meal on a particular night or whatever it may be. So more customized tools. Again, just a lot more efficient than setting up a spreadsheet, even where they have to go fill in this. When they log in, they see what's already taken, what's still available. It's very obvious to them with these different sites. Martin, and as we researched, we found that Google Calendar can do something very similar. At least the Google Workspace calendar can, not personal calendars, at least not yet, but you can add appointment slots to your Workspace calendar and allow people to sign up for times for different, you know, meetings or conferences or whatever it might be. We played a little with this. You actually set up some appointment slots on your MLC calendar, and then I can see them because you sent me a link to select an appointment slot and figure out which one works best for me. I can fill in some information about where we're going to meet and any notes I wanted to add and save it. And it'll save to my personal or my Google Calendar, whatever Google Calendar I'm logged in with. I can't initiate this from personal calendars, but I can save it and respond from a personal calendar. And then I'll get reminders and things through Google Calendaring with this feature.
Yeah, this strikes me as a perfect tool for parents trying to set up or teachers trying to set up parent-teacher conferences, where you can set a whole bunch of time blocks on your Workspace calendar. You send out the invite, and as parents come in, they can select whatever slot works for them, and then it disappears for anybody else coming in after. So it kind of thins out what's available, and it's kind of a first come, first serve. And like you mentioned, it does show as a calendar invite on my calendar if I were the teacher, and also obviously on the individual calendar holder's account as well. And then you get the reminders and everything's set up. So very slick, very free, which is nice because many of our teachers already have that Workspace edition. And it's important to make it as simple as possible. And I think that's it works really well. So,
and Martin, as you were looking at it from your end, I think you remarked that it does allow you to take notes, and it saves it to a Google Doc. So you can, that meeting notes component is kind of baked right in as well.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, it gives you all the things you need for a successful meeting. So Sally, I think those are the main ones that we wanted to share and the main concepts. Forms in general are ways to do some scheduling as well. And we talked about some of those in a previous episode back 650, I want to say, where the title of the show was Forms Are Your Friend. That was back in March of last year, kind of mid-pandemic, about how we get information, how we set this stuff up. So there are lots of different ways to do this and lots of different cool tools that are available. So,
yeah. And if our listeners are using something in particular that might, benefit the whole audience, we'd love to hear from you and hear your success stories with calendaring and scheduling. Martin, you reminded me at the beginning that we wrote a book on productivity and such things, and calendaring was a part of that. So if you haven't checked out that book, it's called With All Your Heart, and it's available through the Wells Tech website. It's over in the sidebar menu, and you can read more about calendaring in With All Your Heart.
Yep, paper or digital through our friends at Amazon. All right. Hopefully that was a useful conversation. I know I get a little bit charged up about something that really is a time suck if you don't do it right. So good stuff there. Thanks for sharing your thoughts, Sally. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to a ministry resource segment of the show. Sally, what do you want to call everybody's attention to as a resource today?
Well, I've recently had the opportunity to work a little bit with the Wells Online Yearbook. It's available at yearbook.wells.net, and it's just a whole treasure chest of information. And if you haven't checked it out lately, maybe you can find some things that'll be beneficial to you in your personal or public ministries, however you need to use it. At its simplest, it is a way to look up churches if you're on vacation. So that's kind of how the whole thing started. We had a church locator, and it's baked right in now. You can put in specific address things and tell it whether you want to look for churches, even with things like hearing loops and worship broadcasts. You can look for schools or care facilities, all kinds of things. Very robust locator search. Or you can simply put in a city and search pretty simply on a location or a name for a church or organization. And when you do that, different ones come up, and you can drill down and click on a particular one and find out information about them. So I'm looking now at St. Paul's in North Mankato, Minnesota. This is my home congregation, and you can see all kinds of great things about the church once you've looked them up. You can see their contact information. There's a button here where you can get directions, and it'll map for you using Google Maps, directions to the church just with one click. You can get related information, so different schools and high school associations, even campus ministry locations that the church is connected to. You can find out the schedule of the church worship services, when it's broadcast on television and live stream. You can get church statistics even, so you can click in and find out about membership counts and all kinds of things like that. There's staff information, and you can drill down and see their contact information. You can go to circuit level information. So this church is part of a particular district conference and circuit. You can see the other churches and schools that are a part of that, or even all the people that are a part of that particular district conference and circuit. So lots of great information, just if you're trying to find a church because you're on vacation or whatever the need may be. But the church locator is just one aspect of the online yearbook. You can search for specific people in the yearbook. So all called workers, different board and committee and commission members, that kind of thing. We have a page specifically dedicated to live streaming. So you can find different live streams and links to those live streams from across the Synod. This page exploded, Martin, when the pandemic happened and everyone started live streaming. We spent a lot of time, shoring up the information here so people could get to live stream data. Let's see what else. I already mentioned that you can see things by district conference circuit and that you can see things organized by the different boards, committees, commissions, all the different parts of the synod. You can drill down and find information on who's on those boards, and it links to their specific contact information if you needed to get in touch with them. So what am I missing, Martin? There's so much great stuff here.
I think you captured most of it. I think the tool is available through the Wells app as well. So it's mobile friendly. So if you want to just bring it up on your phone, it should perform pretty well there. And it's as accurate as it can be. So it's really going to provide you with, I think the information on here is only at most a day old. So if information is updated, it's going to be updated the next day. Unlike obviously the paper yearbook, which many people have, it's not going to be quite as accurate because that's going to be, could be as much as a year old. So
mm-hmm. We publish the paper one once a year. We do update this daily, and we'll even take your church photos. If you don't have a photo that's out right in the yearbook, or if you want to update the photo that's included in the yearbook, you should look up your photo and see how it looks. We will take those. You can contact us and send in a new photo. I think I noticed it down here in the footer that you can submit a new photo. So we hope that you make use of the yearbook. I know it's been my go-to in so many different ways, and I just wanted to make mention of it today.
Great resource. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to our picks of the week.
And if you know me or follow me on social media at all, you won't be surprised that my pick of the week is a brand new word game called Wordle. I've been very excited about it the last few weeks. It's a simple concept. It's very much like Mastermind, which uses colors, but Wordle uses five-letter words. Basically, you put in a word, you make a guess at today's Wordle, and it'll light up the letters green if you have the correct letter in the correct location, gold or yellow if it's the correct letter but it's in the wrong location, and gray if it's an incorrect letter or a letter that isn't in the word. And so pretty simple concept, and it's just really taken off and become very popular, mainly because people share their results as they do the Wordles. And so you get six tries, and at the end of the six tries, it'll tell you what the word is. You will have lost your opportunity to correctly solve the Wordle of the day. And just a lot of fun, a new different challenge. What's neat about it is I just recently read that the guy who created it just kind of created it for his girlfriend because she liked to do word puzzles. He did that last October of 2021. So today's Wordle is like the 230th one that's been published. The official Wordle birth, although there's a lot of different Wordle puzzles out there now. Anyway, it kind of took off, went viral, and just recently the New York Times actually bought it to incorporate it into their offerings of puzzles. So if you're a puzzle fan, you're going to see Wordle through the New York Times as well. There are a lot of different knockoffs of it. You can get all the archives of Wordle, all kinds of fun things. But one that I was thinking about as I prepared my Sunday school lesson this week was making my own Wordle. And so I went out, and you can go to mywordle.me. It resolves to a strivemath.com website, but mywordle.me will get you there. And then you can create your own Wordle. And I did it for my Sunday school kids this week, and they solved the Wordles that I created for them with words from the lesson we did. So I always start with Saint. That's just the way I do it. And ultimately, they figured out the word was serve. And then once you're done, like I said, you get kind of representation of the colors that you can share in social media. So I think there are school and ministry applications for this. It's something fun. I saw some different church communications where they just spelled words in this format and lit up things to kind of promote something at church or whatever, just kind of taking advantage of the fun of this new puzzle that's out there. So thought it was worth sharing with others.
Interesting. I I may be the only person on earth who has not used it yet, but it was that was a good demo. So why do you think it's the five letters? Why do you think they pick five letters?
That's a good question. I have no answer for, because it's a good size. I don't know. There's a lot of five letter words.
Probably are a lot of five letter words. So I wonder if other Wordles will have, more challenging Wordles will have more letters.
Yeah. And I think I found a couple of different generators. I wonder if we could say generate one that's longer, like Wells Tech. Yeah. So this particular one, there's a couple of different generators, and this one will do longer words when you do your create your own. So if you type in Wells Tech, you will be a winner in one. That
you
never
still
happens.
Only get you still only get six chances, right?
Five That's chances. Right. This one, six and chances. I think I did see another one that let you control how many chances you got. Mm-hmm. One of my friends, her elementary age kids, both had a phone in their hand. I saw a photo of them, and they were combining forces, so they got 12 chances. They were working together on the daily Wordle. I thought they were smart kids. So anyway, cool. Yeah, I'm sure we'll see lots of variations, but the original is Wordle with five letters.
And Wordle is the name of the guy that created it, I think, right?
His last name is Wardle with an Wardle. A. So he, did a little twist on his name.
Gotcha. Interesting. Mm-hmm. All right. There's your Wordle fix of the day. My pick actually has to do with letters as well. And it is a pick I've used in the past. I think maybe 3-4 years ago, this was my pick of the week. Text Expander. There is a Windows and a Mac version, and it is simply a text replacement tool. So you basically create short keywords, and as you type those keywords, it gets replaced with whatever you want it to be replaced with. I think one of the most common uses is, let's say, email signatures. I use that for, I have a number of different email accounts, and I have a different signature for each. So I have a little shortcut. Usually my delimiter, or the character that I know will not cause a problem, is the semicolon, and then I follow the semicolon with whatever shortcut I can remember or I want to use as a reminder. So for signature, for my Wells signature, it's semicolon SIG for signature Wells. Or for my home email, it's SIG home, or SIG peace for my peace email. But I've found some other really cool uses for it, because you can get really complicated in asking it to prompt you for information through the expansion process. So you can use JavaScript or AppleScript or other kinds of scripting tools to make that happen, or some built-in functionality. So it's not rocket science to create these. So one thing that I've been using it a lot for, I've been rereading the entire Bible in 3-year series, because we wanted to change translations. It was still on the old NIV 84 translation. And so we changed it to the EHV, the Evangelical Heritage Version, but we didn't have a narration for it. So I'm doing that. But I'm also creating blog posts for every reading for three years. And so it's a copy and paste exercise. And I've got to massage the data so that the footnotes come out right, and the headers come out the right size, and the formatting. And so I'm able to do all that with text expander snippets. So they go through and change the footnotes to the right numbers and the right formatting, and add codes where necessary. And all I do is I have to just cut and paste and add a few pieces of data, and it does it all for me. So it really has stripped it. What took maybe 10 minutes probably for one reading to do all the formatting and spruce it all up, now is down to about 2 minutes, because I was able to automate all this with Text Expander. You may remember in the past that there had been Text Expander snippets out there for the entire Christian worship hymnal. So you type in a hymn number and it would spit out the verses for you, so easy to create bulletins. It's not as necessary with Service Builder now, although if you don't have Service Builder, this might be an option. But there's all kinds of repetitive tasks. Like I get asked the same question quite a bit related to streaming or other technology topics, security issues. And if I can craft an email that would ultimately be reused, I can plug that into Text Expander, and I can, with a key code, enter that in, and it would enter all that information in for me. So it's a little macro kind of tool, if people remember macros from the old days, but extremely powerful. Just look it up and search a couple of YouTube videos on what it's capable of doing, and you'll be impressed. It is not free. There's a 30-day free trial, but it costs $333 per month. I think if you buy it for the year, there's a different monthly price, which is a little bit higher. But this is a really useful productivity tool that is one of the first things I install if I have a new computer, because it's a lifesaver, really a time saver as well. So that's my pick of the week, Text Expander.
Good stuff, Martin. I am motivated to try it. I'm thinking of all the things I type and retype regularly. And there's got to be a kind of a learning curve to teach your brain and your fingers to remember the strings that you decide to use to pull up the different expanded text. But once you have that under your fingertips, I'm thinking you are flying when you have to respond to things. So,
and there's all kinds of community contributed ones, date, time strings. Yeah. Just some really cool snippets out there.
I was just checking out their blog, and it looks like, you know, sometimes we have these great tools and we can't quite comprehend how to use them or how they might really revolutionize things for us. And so just following their blog, it looks like some really great articles just to kind of get you thinking about ways this powerful tool can work for you. So that might be a good place to tune into as well.
All right, let's move on. We've kind of combined a few of our segments here, and we're calling this one Community News and Feedback. So we'll throw in, you know, if there's tech news or Wells Now news or those kinds of things, we'll put that all in here. But this primarily would be the section where we would talk about questions that have come in through email or our website, through social media, comments, suggestions, those kinds of things. That's still kind of the primary purpose, but we've broadened its scope a little bit just to kind of keep things moving along and tighten up the show a little bit. So one thing we wanted to make people aware of, and that is from our good friends at Northwestern Publishing House, and their Forward in Christ magazine has released, and it started at the beginning of the month, a Every Day with Galatians Bible reading series. So they've broken up the readings for Galatians. So the challenge, so to speak, is to read through Galatians, and there's commentary, and there's just a good way to spend a few minutes of your day going through one of the most beautiful books in the Bible. Just great stuff throughout Galatians, and they packaged it up and allowed you to just kind of go to the website. And I don't know if there's an RSS feed or not. There's a newsletter or an e-news that comes out, I guess, with this information. Or you can go to their website as well to follow along and go through February reading Galatians.
Good stuff. Always in the Word. Good place to be.
Yeah.
Also want to make mention of a website that was recommended to us by Michael Flieger, who teaches at Risen Savior Lutheran School in Mankato and is a fellow church member with me at St. Paul's North Mankato. Good friend. Michael shared that he found Iorad, which is for making walkthrough kind of tutorial videos. It's an interesting concept, Martin, and it seems to really take a lot of the work out of making videos, which has become a real cumbersome and time-consuming thing for teachers to share information, having to sit down and record a video, and you don't want to sound dumb or get it wrong, you know, and have to go back and re-record from the very beginning. Just a really good way to do this. It actually takes the teacher's voice out of it even. Basically, what you do is you kind of turn on the tool, you walk through whatever it is that you want to do with, you know, using your mouse to click on different places, and it turns it into something that shows everywhere you clicked with this bright pink outline. And it actually kind of records in text the steps that you're taking. So in other words, as this person was recording this, they clicked settings, and it actually wrote the words click settings here. And so when you're done with your recording, again, your voice isn't really part of this. It's just basically recording your keystrokes and highlighting them in this way. You can edit the words that it came up with, like click event settings and click speedy meetings and things like that. You could change that to whatever you need it to say. You can elaborate further to describe it or whatever in this typed out text format in the editor behind the scenes. And then it actually pairs the screen recording with this clicking highlighted with a computer animated voice that reads the text that you've prepared. And so you never have to do any audio to go with it. You don't have to worry about timing your audio to go with it or anything like that. And if you forgot something, you can literally just record another step and move it around in your timeline of where it actually should be, and just kind of comes together really well. I'm doing my best to describe it in words.
Yeah, it's a very visual thing. Yes, it is very cool though.
Yeah, there's a great overview video that just kind of walks you through. It shows you that editor behind the scenes and walks you through all of that. So if you are looking for a tool, or if you're in the business of making kind of teaching videos, showing things on your screen, that kind of thing, it doesn't have to necessarily be a website. It can be a PowerPoint presentation or whatever it is, you know, that you want to record. Michael says that he came across it and thought the free version was pretty good, but teachers can get the full feature suite for just $10 a month. He's thinking it can cut some of his teaching time and give him time to help those working at home, which is, you know, always the balance, especially in this pandemic time that we're living through. Teachers are having to, you know, live stream their classes as well as reach out to those that are maybe quarantining or whatever and not in the classroom. And this could be a way for students to get the information and allow you to free up some of your time. So,
yeah, I'm thinking just a nice tool for to have in the toolbox for volunteer training.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
You know that our elders are beginning to do elder calls again. You know that we're hopefully toward the end of COVID, and they're making some visits, and we want them to enter their visit information in our database. And some of these guys are not super computer savvy, so the ability to give an on-screen tutorial, you know, for how to enter or update an elder record in our system would be awesome. And this is kind of step by step. And I think they, as I was looking at the video, there's even like blur tools. So if there's confidential information you don't want on your screencast, you can, you know, blur that out. And just a very full featured tool. Yeah. Nice find.
Impressed. All right. And then we have one more thing in the list, Martin. I'm thinking maybe you added this.
I did add this because I'm always on the lookout for confirmation that I made the right choice in tool selection. And this is a comparison between GoodNotes and Notability. And Sally, I know you're GoodNotes and I am Notability. And here's a great article that has been updated by the folks at Paperlike. Paperlike is a screen protector that makes your iPad screen feel more like paper, so that when you're using the Apple Pencil, it provides some resistance, and I like the feeling a lot better. But anyway, so they're interested in obviously getting people into these tools, and this does a nice job. They originally published this back in 2019, but they added an update here in February to some of the tool sets because both of them have new versions. They just do a great job at kind of going step by step by step, all the features, and compare and contrast each one. And they note that Notability went to a subscription model and what the prices are. And I think you'd be able to read this if you're trying to determine whether one of these is for you or which one is for you. This would be a great article to reference. And I am a big fan of Notability, and I've actually tried GoodNotes too, and I think it's got a lot going for it as well. But these are great at capturing handwritten notes, and there's searchability, there's all kinds of annotation tools, and you can insert pictures and type text if you want, just all kinds of great stuff within these tools. They both do a great job. So take a look at this article if it is something that you are interested in learning a little bit more about or making a choice. These are not super expensive tools, but I think they're valuable if you're planning on using your pencil, Apple Pencil, on your iPad.
Good stuff, Martin. I do use GoodNotes pretty much daily, and I use it with PDFs that I buy that look a lot like a paper planner. And, you know, so they have that look and feel, and I'm just annotating on top of this PDF document, basically. But it's all linked up. It has tabs down the side so I can jump to whatever month and that kind of thing. So I know GoodNotes is very versatile for that kind of
all
usage.
All kinds of templates, bullet journal templates and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fun stuff. And I actually have used, and I think I own Notability. I just kind of moved to GoodNotes because of the PDFs that I wanted to put in there kind of promoted GoodNotes or whatever.
They saw the writing on the wall, so to speak. Then they added that too.
Oh, cool. I'm curious, just kind of a side conversation, the paper-like screen protector, is that what you call it? Paper-like?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Does that tear up your nib of your pencil? That's the bad side that I'd heard about those.
Not really. I mean, I haven't noticed that it has been a problem. They give you two sheets, and your nibs, when you get a Apple Pencil, you get two nibs as well. I've also seen there's little caps you can put on your pencil that make it feel more, when you use it, it feels more like a pencil. Hmm. So you don't use the screen protector, you just use the nib cap, so to speak. And it does that. I can't vouch for those. I've always used the paper like ones, and it does two things. It protects the screen, of course, and then it gives you that better writing experience. And it kind of dampens the sound too. That's kind of one of the things when you're writing on glass, it's all tap, tap, tap.
Click, click, click. Yes.
Yeah. The screen protectors kind of damp that down a little bit too. So good question.
Good information. I've never used either. So I just tap, tap, tap all the time.
Right. So anyway, that's going to do it, I think, for the show today. We really appreciate you joining us. If you want to contribute to the show, please go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net. And there you can leave a comment on a particular show. You can visit one of our social gathering places, so to speak. We're Facebook, Twitter, Digo, Pinterest, et cetera, et cetera. So you can find all those links there. You can even leave a voicemail. There's a big blue button on the right-hand side that says send voicemail. We do listen to those. And if appropriate, we'll share those on the show as well. So join the conversation. We really appreciate you being here, and hope you enjoyed the show today. And we'll come back the next time we gather together, Thursday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I don't know, but it will be, Lord willing, another show after this one. So take care, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Blessings. Bye-bye.